Please listen carefully.
Well, hello, universe, and welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Christy Jansen.
And I'm Amelia Buckley.
And we are part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media, social media, and the direction of your day to help make it one focused on solutions.
7 days a week, we publish positive news stories written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And also, we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, and home office-worthy podcast. Today is Wednesday, the 15th of September, 2021. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Amelia. How are you? Thanks for filling in for Summers today.
I'm good. Yeah, of course. Brennan has a little stomach bug, which is a bummer. But it means I get to be on the pod.
The joys of being a mother to a very small child.
I know. Oh, getting the flu as a kid was so, I hated it so much too. Mm-hmm.
So what are you up to today?
Today, not much. Just working. The weather's a little cooler here, which has been nice. And I actually, yesterday I tackled cleaning my whole room, like top to bottom, and like getting everything put in place. You know, when you move somewhere new and you set everything up and then you live there for like a month or two and you're like, wait, things need to be different. So I went through that whole process yesterday of like, things where I originally put them aren't actually where I want them. So I did some reorganizing, but yeah, just a puttering around the house day. How about you?
Well, it always feels good to sort of start fresh and reorganize. I'm a big fan of reorganizing. I mean, I did that recently when I had to move out and then back in for the termite tenting. Mm-hmm. And there's something so refreshing to clearing out clutter and really making your space feel like something you like being in.
Yeah.
It's a,
especially like right now.
Yeah, especially right now. And I was just reading about how September is a really good time to start the year. And I remember when I was a kid, you know, starting school or coming back from the summer, I always felt like this was the beginning of the year mm-hmm. in a way. It's kind of like, and I think it is the beginning of a fiscal year for some corporations.
So yeah.
It's a different, fresh start.
I agree.
Along the lines of a new year. So,
well, we wrote that story about how fall is actually a better time to make New Year's resolutions.
Yeah.
The article is explaining that the timing between the start of September and Halloween is basically 9 weeks. And that's the amount of time that research has shown that it takes to like fully adopt a new hobby or habit. So they're saying that if you start your resolutions in early September, you'll have them down by Halloween.
Maybe by then I'll have my gratitude morning practice down. And
exactly.
I've been really enjoying doing that these last few mornings.
It's going well. Have you been doing it with your body scans?
I've been doing that. I switched that to my evening time, like based on your recommendation. And so in the morning, I start my day before I open my phone or look at the news or anything. I'm writing down what's in my mind and what I'm grateful for. And I really enjoyed writing about that this morning. And I got really into writing about how I'm grateful for my cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And I got
There's
into all the
so special about that first cup of coffee in the morning where you're like, yes.
And then in the evenings, I'm writing about my 5 wins for the day, like what went well, what did I feel like was a success, you know, and it can be a tiny little thing like picking up my son from school and his friend and enjoying the ride with them. That was what it was yesterday, you know.
I love that. So, well, there are some great stories on the Optimist Daily today. And speaking of wins, I think your story is about a study that proves a little bit of a win.
So thank you. Thank you. I will start off with mine because I loved this headline. And when I read the article, I felt really very positive, just showing how actually taking action can have an effect. The headline reads, "Indigenous resistance has prevented a shocking amount of emissions." And we all know that Indigenous communities have been at the forefront of many climate action and conservation initiatives. And it's not just a stereotype. They actually have been very active. Some protests like blocking of the Dakota Access Pipeline have gotten a lot of press and discussion. There's others like stopping the Mountain Valley Gas Pipeline, which are less well known. Also, we've written a lot about installing renewable energy grids on tribal lands, but a lot of mainstream media haven't really recognized those kinds of initiatives. by Indigenous groups in and First Nation groups in the United States and Canada and around the world. However, there's a new report which has been published by the Indigenous Environment Network, or the Indigenous Environmental Network, IEN, which demonstrates that these projects and these protests are having a profound impact on the overall emissions levels in North America specifically. They're focused on 21 fossil fuel projects across the United States and Canada that have been stopped or delayed. And the emissions that have been delayed based on those protests are equivalent to 1/4 of those produced annually by the two countries, United States and Canada. So that's a pretty
substantial, a hefty amount of emissions.
Exactly. The fossil fuel projects which have been stopped would have emitted 780 metric tons of greenhouse gases every year. So those are now not just delayed, but stopped. And there are current protests going on, or legal challenges going on, not just protesting, but also using court cases, legally challenging projects that would dump an additional 800 million metric tons into the atmosphere annually. So in total, the resistance, whether it's protesting or legally challenging projects and winning, has prevented a total of 1,587 billion metric tons of annual greenhouse emissions. That is the equivalent of 400 new coal-fired power plants. And this report was generated from publicly available data from 9 different environmental and oil regulation groups. So it's a compilation of what's been going on over the last few years. To me, it bolsters my sense that it really matters to speak up and to speak out and to take action. You can't just give this kind of development a pass and say we have no power, because we really do. So this report dispels that myth that protesting and challenging big fossil fuel projects has little overall impact, because in fact it does. And it also demonstrates the critical role that Indigenous peoples have played in restoring ecological balance and acknowledging that it really matters to have a livable environment for us and the entire biosphere, and all the creatures that live on this planet. I just love this article. Now, one other thing that it points out is that 35 states have now passed anti-protest laws and have jailed or fined peaceful protesters. So there's some definite pushback, but it does illustrate the efficacy that Indigenous climate action leadership can provide, and it emphasizes the need to uplift even more Indigenous voices and projects. For more on this, you can go to the Indigenous Environmental Network site, which is the IEN, and you can support their work and learn more about the work that they're doing in their resistance against carbon.
Yeah, I really like this story because it does point out like the true impact of Indigenous action, which I think a lot of the time mainstream media overlooks it. You know, it's easy to elevate voices like Greta Thunberg or other, you know, and not that she's not equally inspiring, but I think that a lot of times Indigenous action gets really overlooked when it's so instrumental. I mean, I know we have a story on the Optimist Daily tomorrow morning about how Bristol Bay in Alaska was just given EPA protections. And a huge part of that was the work done by an Indigenous legal action group.
Right. And I think it's so important because, in fact, those are the communities that are often most heavily impacted by these kinds of developments. The pipelines, the refineries, these kind of fossil fuel projects, they often run right through Indigenous lands or the communities that are marginalized because they have less perceived political power. And because of that, because they've been disenfranchised in different ways, because they've been less vocal in their opposition, they don't have the resources financially or organizationally sometimes. So these kinds of organized community protests from the Indigenous or marginalized communities actually deserve even more focus than, you know, the comfortable middle class.
Exactly.
Exactly. But both are good.
So my story also has to do, my story also has to do with environmental action. This one is more, I guess it's community-wide and also at a personal level, but it's talking about a new bill in California that is aiming to make recycling logos more accurate, I would say. Essentially, today, although a lot of products have recycling logos on them, many of them are actually not recyclable. A lot of these products might be recyclable in a perfect system, but in modern recycling systems, which are far from perfect, they end up not being recycled at all, which means that today only 10% of plastics, for example, in the United States are actually recycled, even though many of them have recyclable logos. So this new initiative called Senate Bill 343 intends to make manufacturers earn the right to use this recyclable logo by requiring that they ensure that their products are made of materials that are recycled at a rate of 75% or higher. So it means that in non-perfect conditions, 75% of their product that they make must be recycled in order to have this logo on it. And it also can't have toxic compounds like PFAS, which are known as forever chemicals. The bill was proposed by State Senator Ben Allen, and he actually realized that he was engaging in an issue called wish cycling in his own household, which is essentially, I think a lot of us are guilty of this sometimes. We put something in the recycling because we believe it's recycled, and then it actually doesn't end up being recycled. I know that when I first moved to Montana, I did a lot of wish cycling because I didn't fully understand the recycling systems here. And then somebody that lived here was like, actually, the state of Montana doesn't recycle aluminum or plastics, so you can only recycle cardboard. It's like, okay, good to know.
Which is really good to know, because different areas will have different abilities. And if you put non-recyclable materials in a recycle stream, it can actually pollute the entire bucket of recyclables that you have. So this is really important to think about.
It's not actually law yet, but if it does become law, and hopefully it will, because it has some significant backing, then Americans can know that, or specifically Californians can know that items that have the recyclable logo on them actually are recyclable. And hopefully it'll clarify the process a little bit for people who are confused.
I think this is super important because it attacks sort of that greenwashing idea that I think there was an article we recently wrote about how Netherlands was not letting Shell do greenwash advertising, where they were making themselves look more environmentally friendly than they actually were. This is in the Netherlands. So if you have a recycling logo, it makes us as consumers feel better about buying like the Keurig coffee pods, for example, which, you know, theoretically they could be recycled, but in reality, they are almost never recycled.
Exactly. It's a huge problem. I love this story. If you pair it with the one out of Maine, how Maine is shifting the burden of paying for recycling to corporations. So if we make our systems more efficient, and then we also shift the burden of paying for them to corporations rather than consumers, we would have a way better recycling system in this country.
Right. And it would also recapture some of those externalized costs. So it might mean that, you know, our Keurig coffee pods are far more expensive because now the company creating those needs to pay for the real costs of the end of life part of that coffee pod. So even though we love the convenience of them, it makes it a lot more expensive. So let's just have drip coffee or a French press
every morning. I love it.
What else is on the headlines today? What are there other good stories?
We've got good news for our oceans. Tuna species are no longer on the brink of extinction. So that one's a breakdown of different tuna species and where they are standing right now. India adopts new holistic approach to address homelessness. That one's interesting too. San Francisco schools successfully reopened for all students. 5 restorative movements to shake off exhaustion. And these eco-friendly crafts use supplies right from your garden. I think there's couple other ones on there. Do you see any other ones?
I like this story about how seals in the River Thames reveal that it is healthier than people think. Filterless air purification systems that capture pollution into building tiles. Finally, the UK is inviting everybody to donate blood, regardless of sexual orientation. I think that's finally clearing out some of the restrictions that put in place after the HIV epidemic. So maybe there's new understanding there on how to be careful about that while, you know, dropping barriers for donating blood. And I think that's a good solution. And that is it for today's Optimist Daily headlines. Go check out that and more on theoptimistdaily.com. Thanks, Amelia, for being here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we promise to keep sharing these kinds of positive solution-based stories, ideas on how you can get active and take action in helping to ensure that the changing world is changed for the good. We promise to keep covering current events with accuracy, legitimate sources that aren't inflammatory, and offering you information that is very useful for charting new paths for all of us.
If you're not already, please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com, and for just $5 a month, support reader-funded independent journalism. Be part of the solution-changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset. All right, guys, let's keep the Optimist Daily free to all who need it, supported by those who can. Thanks for listening today, and we will be back with more tomorrow.